Okay, good morning, everybody. Morning. Sima Teva. We're up to Perek Lamed Aleph here in the Netzach, Israel. Now, what he does in this Perek, thematically what the Perek is about, is just trying to accent the idea that the peace of Yeshua, the yearning for Geula, is something which is not reserved or limited to the Jewish people. That not only is Klal Yisrael yearning for Geula, but in fact HaKadosh Baruch Hu is yearning for Geula as well. That Geula is the Seder Ha'olam. Geula, redemption, the situation where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is visible and present in the world and the Jewish people are no longer subject and subordinate to other nations, is the way things ought to be. And anything short of that is a disturbance. Not just to us, who are the ones who are out of place and so on, the ones who can feel directly dislocated. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu also has the same feelings. That's the way he starts the Perek, and that's going to really be the first in the Gemara which he quotes, which we're not going to spend a lot of time on. What we're going to spend more time on is the second Gemara which he discusses, which is one of the classic Agaritas, one of the Agaritas of Rabba Bar Bar Chana and Bava Basra, very, very rich and obtuse kind of an Agadita that we find that has some very, very, very special analysis. But the main point, and again, I just want to, you know, highlight quickly the first section of this parak, so we can see what he's doing there. He says, "Yisbar lochem in advaram asher amarnu." I just want to read the first paragraph. "Ki agolus hu yitzia min seder ha'olam." Golus is a deviation from the order of the world, from the way things ought to be. "Umikol shekein churban habayis hakadosh shadavar ze yitzia min haseder haroy legamrei." Certainly, the destruction of the holy house of the Beis Hamikdash is a complete deviation from the way things ought to be. Sharei Seder HaMetzius Chayev Shiyah HaBayis Kodesh Lo'ilo. The way things ought to be would be that it should be a constant presence, a home for HaKadosh Baruch Hu down here. V'lakach Amram, ki mi she'ein ha'yisa tshuva. So we say, a person who doesn't do tshuva ad she'yachayza HaBayis Kvar Yishoyin, akilu hechrev ha'yisa, k'may she'yisbar l'mala. Remember, we had before somebody who, if the Beis HaMikdash isn't rebuilt in their time, it's as if it was destroyed in their time. What's the idea? Because, the way the Maharal understands it pretty much, is because the Mikdash is always supposed to be there. If the idea is that the Mikdash is a phenomenon that appears on the scene sometimes. So it was there, and now it's gone. So it's not here in my time. It's not here in my time. But if the idea is that the standard, the default, is the world with the presence of Hashem with the Mikdash, then for it ever not to be that way is because there's something pushing it out, something pushing it away. And therefore, we have this kind of an attitude. And he says, "V'lokai chach matzanu v'divrei chachamim, ki hu yisbarach, asher sider esayilam v'chavetz b'seder anintzoyim, mekavu mitzapeh la'gula." That's why we find, in the words of Chazal, that it's not just us who yearn for the geula, but it's also HaKadosh Baruch Hu who does. Hashem created the world. He ordered the world. He made it the way it ought to be. And therefore, the disturbance of this order is not just for us, the little subjects who seem to be caught up in it, but it's also a disturbance for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And this notion is a notion which we've discussed to some degree before. It's a notion which has very, very, very broad coverage in Sfarim, in our thinking. You know, you've heard of the notion of Shechinta Begalusa, that the Shechina itself is experiencing Galus. A notion famously said of Imay Anaychi Betzara, I am with them in their difficulty. When they went down to Mitzrayim, Anaychi Eredimcha Mitzrayim, I'm going to go down with you. Anaychi Al Chogam Aloy, I'll come out with you from Mitzrayim. Right? It's said in so many places and layers in Chazal, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu created this world so that it should be an addition, an expansion, a reflection of His presence as it is, as it exists. And therefore, when that fails, when that falters, it's not just a loss for us. It's, so to speak, a loss for HaKadosh Baruch Hu also. It's mission not yet accomplished. And to a great degree, that is a big focus of these days that we're going through right now. You know, our tefillas on Rosh Hashanah are focused almost singly Right? Besides for some of the piyut, you know, and later editions where we're going to talk about, you know, our judgment and so on and so forth, the bracha of Zichronos, but the, you know, the standard Shmoneh Esrei of Rosh Hashanah, the mainstay editions of Rosh Hashanah are about the whole world recognizing Hashem's presence, the restoration of that. Because Rosh Hashanah is the anniversary of the creation of the world. And that's why it's the day of judgment, because this is the time when HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, okay, let's see how we are living up to the original plan. The world was created for a purpose. How are we doing vis-a-vis that purpose? Rosh Hashanah is the Yom HaDin to see where we are in terms of plan A, in terms of the original plan. And so when we daven on Rosh Hashanah, we daven for the fulfillment of the original plan. And the fulfillment of the original plan is that everybody in the world should be able to recognize Hashem. And the whole Geula picture, the whole redemption picture that derives from that. That's why we're davening for that on Rosh Hashanah. That's why we yearn for Geula. You know, it's a big thing. We're not just yearning for Geula, so we're going to have it easy. And we're not even just davening for Geula, as the Rambam says at the end of Hilchos Melachim, because we say, oh, at that time we're going to be able to attain such greater spiritual levels. We daven for Geula because Hashem's interests, for Kiddush Shem Shamayim, to sanctify Hashem's name in the world, and to recognize that the world as it is very much, very, very much incomplete to His designs, to His standards, to His desires. And that's why we find in many, many places where we find that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's yearning for the Geula too. And whatever is holding it back, we need to know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is yearning for the Geula too. And he starts by bringing a Gemara in Sanhedrin, which says, you know, that you always have to hope for the Geula. Imismameach hakelo ki voyavoy velo yacher. If he delays, wait for him, because come, he will surely come, and he will not delay. And it brings all kinds of chazal and all kinds of psukim. There were those who darshaned from this pasuk that you're going to have to wait this long, and from that pasuk that you're going to have to wait this long. No, always hope. And don't worry about the Mechashvei Kitzin, brings the Gemara, that, you know, Mechashvei Kitzin, people who calculate exactly when Mashiach is going to come, it's not a good thing, because what happens is, it leaves the impression, this is the way the Maharal reads the Gemara, for those who say, oh, that was that date, and then the date comes and goes, and nothing happened, so then there's going to be tremendous disappointment. And you have to come up with crazy ideas in order to be able to preserve the faith, or otherwise you risk widespread disenchantment, right? So we have, vans driving down the street, you know, with Mashiach is here, right? Because otherwise it's not Shaykh, right? If everyone counts on a specific person or something being Mashiach, and then the person dies, so you're going to lose everybody, right? So then you have to somehow, you know, reformulate it to fit. It creates such an environment for disappointment and disenchantment. You know, like happened many times in Jewish history when they had these expectations, the Frankists and the Shabtai Tzvinix and everything, the Sabbateans and, you know, these people. It creates tremendous disillusionment. That's what the Gemara derides. So, you know, don't think about dates. Don't calculate dates. Wait for him, yearn for him. He can come. He can surely come. He will surely come. And the pasuk and the Gemara continues, and this is really more to what the Maharal is bringing this Gemara for here. Shema Taimer Anu Mechakim Huenei Mechake. Maybe you'll say, okay, we're waiting for Mashiach to come, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu, yeah, big deal, yeah, nishnisht. Tamu Loimar, V'chein Yichaka Hashem L'chanenchem, V'chein Yochus L'rachemchem. Hashem Himself is waiting to be gracious to you. He wants to help you. He wants to have the compassion on you. So Hashem's waiting for it too. Says the Gemara, okay, so then what's the deal? If we're waiting for it, and he's waiting for it, so what's in the way? It says the Gemara, Midas Hadin Ma'akeves. There's a Midas Hadin. There's a measure of judgment that says, look, you know, there has to be some deserving of it for it to be able to come. And even though we have to wait for Midas Hadin, we wait nevertheless. We wait and we yearn and we want it to come, and somehow perhaps to somehow get past the Midas Hadin. So he speaks more here about some of the elements of the exact cheshbonos that the Gemara refers to, and so on and so forth. But the Gemara goes, and you know, but he concludes and he says again, you see from the words of Chazal that it's not just we who la'aleinu suffered the bitter galus. You know, it seems to us that we're the ones who are suffering, that we yearn for gula and we must yearn for gula. But it's also HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who created the world with a design, with an endpoint, with a goal, and when it's not happening, so he also, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, yearns for the resolution of that goal. And towards this end, he brings a Gemara, a beautiful Gemara, again, one of the classic Agadatos of Rabbah Bar Bar Chana in Maseches Bava Basra. It's towards the end of that section of the Agadatos. A number of these Agadais were also Mufurish by the Gra. That's, you know, Rabbi Feldman, Shiva wrote a book, The Juggler and the King, right, which is on that Kuntres from the Gra, the Pirush from the Gra, Al-Kama Agadais. And includes many of these, but not this particular one. The Gemara says like this. It's the middle of a Gemara where it says that that Rabbah Bar Bar Chana was traveling in the Midbar, and the Slave Bahadein Ahu Taya. He was accompanied by a certain Taya. Taya is sometimes it's called like a Yishmaeli, right? He's basically a traveling salesman. Rashi says Seicher Yishmaeli, an Arab traveler who was accompanying him, and he told him some interesting things. So one of the interesting things he said to him was, Amar le to achvilach Har Sinai. Come, let me show you Har Sinai, or Tura de Sinai in Aramaic, the mountain of Sinai. Azli, Chazoi, so they went, and he showed them Har Sinai, okay, a tour guide. Azli, they went Chazoi, he saw the Hadrele Akrava. He saw that Har Sinai was surrounded by scorpions. The Kaima, Kichamri Chivarte. And it was not; these were not just your regular standard size scorpions, but they were the size. They looked like white donkeys, huh?
Scorpions
on steroids. Mutant scorpions. Okay, we got it all here. So he says, "Shamati baskel shaymeres," and he says, "You know, when I was there, I heard a baskel, I heard a heavenly voice, and it was saying, Oili shenishbati, woe unto me that I made this oath. V'achshav shenishbati, but now that I made this oath, me meferli, who can veto the oath for me? Who can negate it? Who can do ataras nedarim for me?" So that's what happened. So he saw Har Sinai surrounded by scorpions, like donkeys, right? White donkeys, nachtertzu. And he heard Hashem bemoaning the fact that he had made the oath and he had nobody to veto it. Ki asoy lekami derabonan. When I came before the Rabbanan and I told them the story, Amruli, they said to me, Kol Abba Chamra. They said, Oi, Kol Abba Chamra. Abba is indeed a Chamra. He's like a donkey. He's like a fool. Right, Abba, Rabbah Bar Bar Chana was, as Rashi explains, Rabbi Abba Bar Chana. Right, so he says, you're a fool. Kol Bar Bar Chana Sichsa. Right, so I said any Abba, which was insulting for his first name, and if you're the Bar Bar Chana, you're weiter a Sichsa, you're an idiot. Havaloch Loimar, the first one was he was a donkey, second one was an idiot. Havaloch Loimar, you should have said Mufarloch. You should have been Matir Neder for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You were there. Why didn't you do it? However, Vuhu Savar, but he was thinking, the reason why he didn't want to do that was because he wasn't sure what Hashem meant. Dilma Shuasa de Mabulhu. Maybe the oath that Hashem was bemoaning, oh, I wish somebody would release me of this oath, was a shvua, the shvua he had made after the Mabul, that he wouldn't destroy the world anymore. So in other words, the way they took it was that the shvua that Hashem had made was, those guys, I'm not bringing them back so fast. So why didn't you veto? Hashem is crying about it. Why didn't you veto it? And then he would have been able to bring us back. So he said, I didn't know which oath he was referring to. Maybe he was referring to the oath that he said, those guys, I'm never going to destroy them. I'm never going to destroy the world. And if we'd step forward and veto it, boom, it would be destructive. Hashem didn't specify the Shvua. Rabbanan, but the Rabbanan nevertheless did not think that he had chosen wisely. Tim Cain, Oili Lama. Why is Hashem saying, woe unto me? Why is Hashem saying, woe unto me? If he's saying, woe unto me, that means that it was about the Golus. Not about keeping them alive, but about the Golus. Very, very interesting Gemara. So let's take a look a little bit at how the Maharal explains this Gemara. And some of it is not so directly relevant to Golus, but it's a whole picture that's being drawn here about this this situation and this vision of Har Sinai. So, first question is, why, the way he says it, I mean, it's really not, maybe not the first question, but in sequence, but one question is, why is Har Sinai appearing with these strange creatures around it, with scorpions, like donkeys, mutant scorpions, whatever you want it, right? So why is it appearing this way? And why is it that when Rabba Bar Bar Chana wants to know where Har Sinai is, so he gets shown by an Arab, he gets shown by a Taya. Like, what's going on over here? Says the Maharal, HaChachmais Heim Shtayim Ba'olam. There are two realms of wisdom that exist in the world. There is the wisdom of nature, and there's the wisdom of Torah. We know it's always going to be divided in those two ways, right? People talk sometimes, the more philosophically inclined will speak about the revelation of creation and the revelation of Sinai. The revelation of creation was Bereshis Bara Elohim. It wasn't statements of instruction of Torah. It was statements of bringing things into existence. And there's Chachma, of course, called Chachma Sateva. There's the scientific wisdom. There's the empirical wisdom. Wisdom, knowledge, which can be observed just within the physical nature of the world itself. That's one realm of Chachma. And then there's another realm of Chachma. A realm of Chachma of Torah, that Hashem came and brought to the Jewish people with Nevuah, with prophecy. And there, it's a very, very different kind of a thing. It's not analyzing the world which Hashem made, but it's to a certain degree looking at HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. And when it came to that, it's a whole different enterprise. Lo yasa chen l'chol gai, u'mishpatim bal yidalom. That's a uniquely Jewish enterprise. HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't do it for any other nation. He did not let them know his mishpatim. The goyim, the nations of the world, have sheva mitzvahs didhu. They have their seven mitzvahs, the basic laws of morality, which is a Torah, which is theirs. But in terms of the broader Torah, that is ours. And even their Torah, to a certain degree, as we know, as the Rambam paskins and as the Gemara says, they're keeping it based on the word which they got from the Jewish people. The Jewish people's Torah guidance gives it to the goyim. They can study that Torah, but they can't study, in any case, the Torah beyond. And there we have this unique thing, such that, and as the Maharal brings, the Gemara says, the Medrash says, Milachev, right, Malkor, Milachev, Esareh, Bagoyim, Ein Torah. Right, Pasuk in Eicha. Their kings and their princes will be found amongst the nations where there is no Torah. So the Medrash famously says, if somebody comes to you and tells you, Torah Bagoyim, there's Torah amongst the nations, don't believe it. If somebody comes and tells you, Chachma Bagoyim, if they tell you that there's wisdom, general wisdom amongst the nations, that you can believe. Torah is Asher Bochar Bonu Mikol Ha'amim, V'nasan Lanu Es Torah Say. Hashem chose us from amongst the nations, and He gave us the Torah. That wisdom is only ours. General knowledge, that knowledge is different. That general knowledge is universal. It's general. It can be in anybody's realm. And there's a fundamental difference, of course, that exists between the two of them. You know, there's a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. The Mishnah says, Hapoise hamhalach baderech v'shoina, a person who's traveling along the way and he's learning. Hapoisek mishnasai, and he stops learning, and he looks out the window and he says, "Wow, what a beautiful tree, what a beautiful field." Manah ilon zeh, manah nir zeh. Harizeh mischayev benafshai. He's guilty with his life. Chayev misa. I mean, that's one of the terms which seems to use sort of chayev misa. For stopping his learning to go and admire the bria, admire the creation. Even though you know, when you admire the creation, you make a bracha on admiring the creation. And when you see something beautiful, magnificent, it's really inspiring, you make a bracha, isamasa bereshis, some beautiful mountains, you know, striking sights. Admiring Hashem's creation is not, you know, taking a break necessarily from the service of Hashem. What gives? Why is there this change? And the idea is that what we find there, Maral speaks about it, others speak about it, is that there's a huge difference between the admiration of Hashem's creation and the study of Torah. Because the admiration of Hashem's creation is you're looking at something that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made. Whereas when you're learning Hashem's Torah, you are directly looking at HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and you're engaging with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You know, there's an old Jewish joke which says that, you know, the grandmother's walking through the park and pushing the stroller, and somebody comes over and says, looks in the stroller and says, "Ooh, ah," and the grandmother says, "Oh, that's nothing, you should see the pictures." Right? You know, the idea that, you know, something which is a replica or a creation is different than the person himself. You know, it's unbelievable. It's turning away from the one to the other. You know, if you're walking through the National Gallery and you stop at a beautiful, beautiful painting and you're looking at it and you're admiring it and you're whispering to yourself and you're saying, "Wow, look at the sensitivity in the painting, how they picked up every tinge on the complexion of the person's face, and the, you know, the sadness in the face, and the nevertheless the shine in the eyes," and you're looking saying, "Wow, the person who painted it was so attuned and so sensitive, so nuanced, able to pick everything up and then be able to replicate it." And somebody's standing next to you and they say, I appreciate it, you know, that's my painting." And you go and you just say, "Oh, really?" And you keep going, you're looking at it, you're saying, "Wow, this, that, the other thing." And you just let the person walk away. You're admiring the person's handiwork because of, "Oh, look how, what, everything that went in, you know, kulam b'chachma sisa, how wonderful." And you have an opportunity to engage with the person and you're passing that up. You know, you're giving up what it's there for, what it's all about. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the creator of the world. When we're learning Torah, we're engaging with Him. To turn away from Him to admire one of His works, that's the issue there. And Klal Yisrael, Sinai, represents the idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu engaged with us. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu connected us. To everybody else, He created something within which we live. And of course He's there and He's manipulating things from behind His, you know, his veneer or His curtains or whatever it is, you know, pulling the strings above the box. But He's not relating openly with an open conversation, with a peh el peh adaber boy, or a ponim befonim, dibra Hashem imochem, face to face, so to speak, Hashem spoke to you at the mountain. Sinai represents the specific engagement that Klal Yisrael was able to have with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But there's another realm of wisdom, and that's the wisdom generally of the world. So says the Maral. So what happens over here? What happens over here in this story? Ha'adam kain achachma shaloi, mimashu raya umasi. A person gains his wisdom, his general wisdom, empirically from the things which he sees and appreciates, as opposed, you know, and understands, and starts to understand. It's not like the Torah, which we have, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave it to him. So, therefore, he says, when we refer to Seichel, as opposed to Torah, we refer to a Seicher, to a merchant, a traveling a traveling peddler, buyer and seller, salesman, right, who's not even necessarily Jewish. What does he do? He goes around and around. He travels from place to place to gather wisdom. Right? What do you have to do? You either have to travel from place to place, or you have to have all the elements of the world brought to you. Right? A person who's going to learn and understand the chachmas of the world, he has to go observe in a jungle. He has to go observe lakes and streams. He has to observe mountains. He has to observe climates. He has to observe people and animals and look at them and open them up. He has to be a journeyman. He has to go around and travel and see. And so, says the Maharal, when we speak about this taya, we're speaking about empirical wisdom, which is gained from, so to speak, traveling around, looking, and gaining wisdom from them. Rabbah Bar Bachana, on the other hand, represented the Baal HaTaira, represented the person of Taira. The Seicher Yishmaeli, the Taya, represents the person who pursues general wisdom, and Rabbah Bar Bachana, in the story, represents the Seichel HaTaira. So, what's the idea, then, that we would speak about over here, that the Taya, that the peddler, is telling Rabbah Bar Bachana, you know, here, go to the mountain. How does that fit into what's happening over here? So he says that what he's doing is that there is to some degree, from Seichel Ho'enushi, says from a human regular observation, he was able to see that there was something that was unique and special about Har Sinai. In other words, to some degree, even from the outside, there's an ability to apprehend. I think the Maharal is very, very, he's not extremely verbal in explaining this aspect beyond this. But there's something about the Seichel Ho'enushi that is going to be able to admire and tell and let people know about the Torah. Can see from the outside the special quality of Torah, of Sinai, of their relationship. We know that the Ummah Yisraelim were very, very sensitive to Har Sinai. Chazal tell us that the name Sinai, the name Chayrev, derive from what happened to the Ummah Yisraelim as a result. Their sense of exclusion that they got from it, from their hatred came down to the nations of the world. From their destruction came out to the nations of the world. Remember I told you once, Rav Moshe Shapiro said that the letters Bachar, the word Bachar, to choose, Asher Bachar Bonu Mikol Avim, are the same letters as Chorav, to destroy, because by choosing one, he excludes everybody else. So to start at the basic level of observing Har Sinai, observing from a distance this idea, this place of meeting, of moed between Klal Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to some degree Seichel tells you that there's a place like that. The Seicher tells you that there's a place like that. I want to just mention to you a tremendous, tremendous tsushta, tremendous note here in the footnotes of Rabbi Hartman. I think it's beautiful and excellent. He says, right, Maral said that Taya, he's a traveler, because to gain wisdom of the world, you have to travel around, you have to look around. There's a very interesting Gemara on this week's Parsha. Now that I think about it, it's about this week's Parsha. What does it say in this week's Parsha? Ki ha-mitzvah azayis ha-shor anaychi mitzavecha hayoyim, this mitzvah I'm commanding to you, it's not distant from you, it's not rechayka. Loi ba-shamayim, it's not in heavens to say, who's going to go up to the heavens and get it for us? And we'll be able to know it and do it. It's not me'ever layam. It's not overseas to say who's going to go to overseas to get it for us. But rather, it's very close to you. Says the Gemara. What does it mean? It's not in the heavens. Says the Gemara. It won't be found with somebody who's. I mean, there's a famous Gemara when it says that it's not in the heavens, right? Which is that okay? Now it's up to us to figure it out and to pass it. However, the other Gemara, which the Rambam brings in Hilchas Talmud Torah, is that it's not in the heavens, it's not with somebody whose head is up there, who's walking around haughty and arrogant. You will not find Torah together with gava, with arrogance. It just is not possible. And what does it mean, lay me'ever layami? It's not overseas. Says more, it's not going to be found as well amongst those who are traveling overseas all the time, who are in the import-export business. Seichrim. Seichrim. Right? Merchants. It's not going to be found that way. That's the language of the Gemara, is sachranim. The same thing, I mean, it's a different term for taya. Maybe taya is more land-based usually, right? But that's the idea. It won't be found with them. What's the idea? It's not saying chas v'shalom that a person can't be a ben taira if they're a businessman. And parenthetically, it's also not saying, therefore, that a person can't be a basic ben taira with arrogance. And we all have a little bit of arrogance. Sometimes we have a lot of arrogance. And unfortunately, I don't know, to me it seems like we're developing a heck of a lot more of it. And it's a very, very, Chazal have so many terrible things to say about arrogance. But, you know, there's not a complete bittul. What the Gemara is speaking about, when it says, Lo bashamayim hi, lo me'ever layam hi, very clearly in the Rambam, is not the basics. It's what we call keser taira, the crown of taira. The crown of taira is not a person who learns very, very, you know, who learns, make sure to learn every day. Or even a person who learns hours every day. That's not the crown of taira. The crown of taira is a unique, complete relationship with Torah that a person is able to potentially have. And there, that's going to be where a person is basically single-minded. That's all that he wants to succeed at. Yeah, of course, he needs to be able to have food on the table, and he has to work some in order to be able to have food on the table. But he doesn't have ambitions in any area, says the rest. So that this is what the way the Gemara understands it, other than Torah. That's the simple pshat. A person says, you know, I'll have wealth and I'll have Tyra. Right? I'll be able to do them both. Or let me work a little bit and make a lot of money, right? I'm gonna get a good job for, I don't know, for Lehman Brothers or for something, right? And then I'll make a lot of money and then I'll be able to retire, you know, and live on forever. So learn forever. Says the Rambam, if that's the case, he'll never have the crown of Tyra. You know, unless, of course, he changes his thinking. Why? Because there's a dual ambition. There's more than one thing. And Tyra, in a certain sense, you know, is Shira Shirim. Tyra Shira Shirim. Tyra is the love affair, so to speak, with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is monogamous, like any good, real love. It's only the person, his only ambition is Tyra. It's not just that he's going to be distracted from time. It's the place in his heart that we're worried about here more than the time. A person can be, the Rambam is very strong, you know, that a Talmud Chacham is not supposed to be in need of tzedakah. Right? The Rambam was very, very, very fierce about this thing. So the Rambam said, no, don't think, you know, Hillel was a water carrier, you know, and the Rabbi Yochanan was a cobbler, and, you know, the Gedolei HaChachamim, they had jobs. It wasn't a matter that they didn't that all their time was dedicated to Torah. This wasn't true. Not all their time was dedicated to Torah. But all of their heart was dedicated to Torah. All of their ambition was dedicated to Torah. So that's normal pshat. But says, points out Rabbi Hartman, that there's another aspect over here, is that the sachranim is what we're speaking about over here. Is the, in a certain sense, there's two types of wisdom. One type of wisdom is wisdom which is specifically by a person who's going and traveling around. Now he brings the Maral, that the Maral explains that when we say that the Torah is not found by people who travel all over the place, is because when you're traveling distances, so then you're in the world of dimensions. You know, Maral always speaks about the physical world having edges, you know, the four and so on, right? But Torah is not stuck, you know, in dimensions and distances, out here, over there, right? So you can't find Torah there, right? You can't find Torah in the pursuit of it. So whether you're going to go with that Imek or otherwise, but what he's saying is that this is a different kind of a pursuit. It's a different kind of a pursuit. There's a pursuit where the person's going around to look, to explore, and then there's a pursuit which is, you know, the pursuit of Sinai, which is not going around. It's a very, very, to me, it's a very fascinating sugya. So you have to understand what it means, because again, it's a completely different understanding than you normally understand. And you'd say, okay, well, one second, I have to learn maybe wisdom of the world at the same time as I learn the wisdom of Torah. Also, again, gets into a complicated sugya. That's the Gemara in Menachos where Rabbi Shmuel and Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, right? So he asked him, can I learn Torah? Can I go learn other wisdoms? And so on and so forth. At the same time that there is a place certainly for learning other wisdom. But it seems, I think it's a fascinating thing that there's a contrast between Torah and Schaira. Schaira, that word, Schar means around, right? Going around. It's, making the circuit, right? A Socher is the same thing as a Taya. So there's two distinct realms of wisdom that way. Okay. So the general, the one who traveled around, was able to show him to some degree where Sinai was, where that point of connection was, where that point which became for the Jewish people a point of connection, for Rabbi Bar Bar Chana, but for them was a point to some degree of exclusion. And indeed, Sinai to some degree looked that way. Because when you got to Har Sinai, what did you find? You found it surrounded by scorpions. Scorpions are dangerous, very dangerous. When the Mishnah speaks about snakes, right? A person's davening Shemoneh Esrei, even if a snake is going for its heel, he shouldn't interrupt. Why, says the Gemara? The snake's not necessarily going to kill you. But if it's an akra, if it's a scorpion, then you got to be careful. Please do me a favor. Be careful with snakes too. Okay, but not the little green ones, but the other, were there any others, right? So an akrav is the height. Akrav mamis, right? Akitzason, akitzas akrav. When it's a term which is used, their bite, when it speaks about a mortal bite, their bite is the bite of an akrav. So what's the idea? What's the idea? Why is Har Sinai surrounded by these deliverers of death, by the akrav? Why is it that way? So, first glance you would say, when the Jewish people stood at Har Sinai, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, anybody who touches the mountain, Mois Yumas will die. It's true, that was then. But you know what happened? As soon as the shofar was sounded, anybody would be able to walk on Har Sinai. We're not talking here in that kind of a literal sense. But remember that, as we read in the Torah a couple of weeks ago in Parshas Vayechanan, when Klal Yisrael stood at Har Sinai, they couldn't believe that they could stand at Har Sinai and survive. That was the biggest demonstration of Har Sinai, was that they were there, Hashem spoke to them, and they survived. But it wasn't simple that they would survive. In fact, they turned around and they said, and now we can't do it anymore because we're going to die, right? So Moshe Rabbeinu, you have to do it instead of us. And Moshe Rabbeinu went up there, and while Moshe Rabbeinu didn't die, maybe Moshe Rabbeinu never died, however, Moshe Rabbeinu did leave normal physical life. He didn't eat, and he didn't drink, and he left his wife and his family. And he became something else, out of this world, of a whole different nature. And that was what Klal Yisrael knew the implications of going on Har Sinai were. Going on Har Sinai means a bittul of your physicality. So the Taya knew where he was coming. He says, I stop here. I can't. This is where, the nations who are going to be seen as more steeped in Chomer, more steeped in physicality, stop. And where I can show you the way, I can show you where you are going to be able to come to him. So the akrav indeed represents death. The Gemara says that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu spoke to Klal Yisrael Har Sinai, after every word he had to revive them again. I mean, most Hatzalah calls in an hour, right? It was constantly. Everybody had to be revived, because there is an aspect of Misa that comes to Har Sinai. And Chazal tell it to us, even projecting forward, way down the line. Zos HaTorah, Adam Kiyomus Ba'ohel, right? Again, something which the Rambam brings over there in Hilchos Talmud Torah. To really have the crown of Torah, Ein Divrei Torah Miskaimin, Ella b'mi shemei misatmei ela. There's a certain killing of everything else in order to make room for the Torah. So that the Torah was surrounded, in this case, by this akrav, so we can understand. Hold on. But they were mutants, right? They were the size of donkeys. What does that mean, that they were the size of donkeys? So the Maharal says something which anybody who remembers where the Maharal said something similar will get a prize. I'm not going to tell you what it is, but it will get a prize. But the Maharal says that there are two types of destruction. The akrav, you know, if you find a fellow lying in the street, right, you may have to send them to the medical examiner's office in order to be able to figure out what he died of when he died of an akrav bite. How do you identify a scorpion bite? I don't even know, right? It's a scorpion, I think, even has a stinger, right? Is that what it is? Huh?
On his tail, just a little stinger.
Right, it's a stinger on the tail. It pierces in, gets something there into the bloodstream, some kind of a venom or whatever it is, and he dies. He dies from the inside. And it's like what the Gemara speaks about by Nadav and Aviu, that when they died, it wasn't that they got incinerated in the conventional sense. It was like two flames of fire entered their nostrils and burnt out their soul. So, you know, they were still completely physically intact. It was internal injuries. It was something which burnt out their inside. That's akrav. And on the other hand, a chamor, a donkey, I mean, a donkey is something that when it attacks, there's nothing subtle about it. You don't have to go to the medical examiner. There's no mystery. If it got bitten by a donkey, the donkey's damage is from the outside in. It's an outside destruction. And that's another form. So in other words, there was akrava, says the right? I mean, excuse me, just as an illustration, by the way, right? He brings that Rabbi Akiva said that before I learned Torah when I was an Am Oretz, I would say, who can give me a Talmud Chacham, and I will bite him like a donkey. Right? In other words, that's the kind of damage that we would associate. I mean, we're not used to it, right? We're used to thinking of a donkey. You know, we see donkeys, you know, face in Eretz Yisrael, you know, they're walking around like this, very obedient to their, you know, to the Arabs who are pulling them and having them schlep. You know, fine. But there's such a thing as a wild donkey. You don't know what that Arab did to him to get him to walk so nicely like that. Right? So therefore, he says there's two kinds. There's two kinds of heder, and there's the heder from the inside and the heder from the outside, and that's what's represented here. You know, complete from the inside and from the outside. Remember anything like this? Talked about it before. He speaks about the difference between a arrow and a sword. You know, those are the two, so to speak, biblical tools: the tool of Yishmael, the tool of Asa. The arrow pierces, and the sword, you know, there's a sort of like a destruction from the outside. But there are a number of places where he uses this kind of a separation. Interestingly, however, he also has a different pshat. Where is it? Yeah. Where is it? I thought he had another shot as well. Maybe was it a note? Okay, I thought he had another pshat, but I am not finding it here. But the pshat which... Oh, okay, I'm sorry. That's where this other pshat was, I think. Okay, we'll hold it. So he says, and why was it white? Because he says, that's the idea. You know, what does white represent to us? You know, Yom Kippur is white. Right? Yom Kippur were very much identified with the lovin' of Yom Kippur. And it's this purity which is, in a sense, a denial of the physical life, of the physical world. White, in his thinking, and in most conventional thinking, but not at all true in scientific thinking, white is, we would see, the absence of color. Right? Even though scientifically white is the combination of all of the colors of the spectrum, but normally you would say white is the default. White is colorless, right? And that's the idea, pshitus, the simplicity of, right, a very ongoing theme in the Maharal is always, you know, the Chachma of Torah is pshuta, is simple, straight, uncomplicated. And that's the killer, quote-unquote, that is going to exist over here. So that's Har Sinai, that's the Nachash, that's the Akrav, that's the size of a donkey, and so on and so forth. And he says, and I heard a basco, a heavenly voice that was saying, Eli Shenishbati. Woe that I swore. Woe that I made this oath. And again, he speaks about different aspects of this, but the main thing that I would like to just say over here in his thing is that he says, why is this at Har Sinai? Why is this voice at Har Sinai? Why does Dafka find this at Har Sinai? Says the Maharal, this is a beautiful halachic twist, is that the din is, by Hataras Nedarim, that you've got to be there. Right? Lo yachal dvorei aval acherim echlem loy. On the one hand, you can't veto your own neder. Somebody else has to do it for you. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu needed somebody else to do it. But that somebody else had to be with them, had to be in connection with them. I can't make a shliach, the halacha is, it's a machlokas, but I can't make a shliach to do Hataras Nedarim for me. Right, if I can't make it to shul for some reason on Erev Rosh Hashanah, I say, do me a favor, you go do Hataras Nedarim for me. Can't do it. It's only one time when we allow a shliach for Hataras Nedarim, and it's not a shliach. And what's that? You can do Hataras Nedarim for your wife if you want. Why? Because we say Ishtei Kegufay. Because there it's like she's there. You're one unit. However, otherwise you can't, because you have to be there with the person. So where was the, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a shvua, he can't veto it himself. Who's going to veto it? Somebody else that he's connected to. When did Hashem ever establish a connection? Was at Har Sinai. You know, the Gemara says, and he brings the beautiful medrash that says it, that Har Sinai was the time when those that were upstairs came down, and those that were downstairs went up. HaKadosh Baruch Hu descended onto Har Sinai. Moshe Rabbeinu went up to Hashem. Har Sinai was Moed, it was meeting. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu's there lingering at Har Sinai. He says, this is the one place where I can have a face-to-face encounter with somebody, with Kol Yisrael. That's where I had it. And there, maybe I'll be able to find a release for my Shvua. There, maybe I'll be able to find a release for my Shvua. So that's why he's coming there. What he doesn't explain, what I would have wondered is, well, maybe you would hear that voice at the Mokom HaMikdash. Not at Har Sinai, right? Why wouldn't we hear the voice of the Mokom HaMikdash? So he doesn't address it. He doesn't address that, but whatever, you could speculate about that. But he says, but the point again of what he's bringing this whole thing is that he says when he had this exchange, he says, I didn't know what the oath was. Maybe it was an oath about saving the world. Said the Rabbanan to him, no, it certainly was the oath about negative things, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Oy, woe unto me, I wish I could get rid of the Shvua. Hashem wouldn't say, woe unto me, I wish I would have destroyed the world, because then that's filled with charata, that's filled with regret. To destroy the world, to give up on the whole project? Hashem would say, Oy, woe to me for that which is failing to fulfill what HaKadosh Baruch Hu's dreams were, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu's vision was. Oily, woe unto me that I had to destroy the world. Rather, that I had to uproot the world from its proper Seder, that I had to send the Jewish people into Golus. That's the oily. And that's primarily what the Maharal wanted to illustrate from this whole Gemara, which, you know, on the way, we learn a beautiful way to learn in Agarita. That the last word in the Gemara is, if Hashem is saying oily, it's about that He sent us into Golus. Not the fact that He spared us despite Midas Hadin and all of the claims and negative things that could have been brought to bear against us. That's the idea. Huh?
Was the Shavua in connection with sending us to Golos? Was the Shavua regarded not destroying the world, right? Was the Shavua in connection
with Golos? Yeah, so that's a good question. Where do we find a Shavua specifically? But in the Nevi'im you do find it. In the Nevi'im, you do find it. I mean, you have Hishbati Eschem, famously in Shir HaShirim, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu swears about the perpetuation of the Golus, he makes us stay. But the Lashon Nishbati, right, Asher Nishbati V'Api Yimivoyin Al Nuchasi, right, that's on the original Golus. Hashem swore, you're not going to come to Eretz Yisrael this generation. And that's the pattern. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends us into Golus, there's a Shvua component. There's an oath component which is there. Not necessarily that you have to be greater. Not necessarily. Haftaras Nedarim, you know, Ramayisha Feinstein can also do Haftaras Nedarim, you know, in front of a Bezin of Hed Yaitis. One doesn't have to be greater. It's still much tone biur. It's still requiring significant explanation, you know, to understand how that works. Yeah.
Just take you back a second. I didn't stop exactly why it is that the scorpions were so large. I didn't connect.
It was that there was an aspect of scorpion and an aspect of donkey.
Of both things together.
In other words, the scorpion, because of its smallness, it has its piercing damage. When it's big, like a donkey, then it can take them on, you know, with damage from the outside. So it's bringing both aspects, the internal destruction and the external destruction.
The Arab is not able to get in because he can't pass through those two.
Right. He can't connect. Bichlal, right. He can't connect at all. Okay. Now, as I've mentioned to you before, the Gra has no commentary on this part, at least not published commentary on this part of the Agadita. But there's also something that I stumbled upon some time ago. Is that in the Sefer Mamorei Hariyah from Rav Kook, who dedicated a lot to Perushim on the Agadah, in fact, printed from him now, just over the past several years, Ein Ayo, which is an actual running commentary from Rav Kook on the Agadah Hashas, they have on Brachas and Shabbos. It's a very, very, very meaningful Pirush, facing them in Paris. So they have printed in this work called Mamorei Hariyah, his Perush on the Agadah of Rabba Bar Barchana. And he has a different take on it than the Maharal. And he focuses very, very much on this thing, the idea of the Goyim versus the Yom HaSa'ilam. And he says like this, right, this is where that other piece was. He says that Har Sinai, on the one hand, represents Klal Yisrael riding to the top, where because we accepted the Torah, so all of the nations of the world come, and they will be v'chein. What we're going to daven on Rosh Hashanah, v'chein tein kaved Hashem liyamecha. Everybody is going to recognize Hashem, v'chein tein pachtecha al kol ma'asecha. You'll bring your all over all of your creatures, and then when that happens, they're going to give honor and credit to the Jewish people, to Hashem's people. Right, Klal Yisrael rises up above everybody else when we stood there at Har Sinai. However, as we know, so in the end, we read about the Geula, where everybody's going to come, everybody's, all the nations of the world, they're going to want to do our work for us, they're going to take care of us, they'll do everything for us. But in the interim, until the Geula comes, it's very much the opposite. That the nations of the world, who don't recognize and don't appreciate, they hate us more than anything. They want to destroy us because of what Har Sinai gave us. So there's a moment of tikkun when everything switches, but until that moment, it's horrible. It's very, very difficult. And so he says like this. The Taya, right, and Rabba Bar Barchana come to Har Sinai. The Akum and Rabba Bar Sinai come to Har Sinai. And now what's going? We have the nations of the world surrounding us, right? We're surrounded. Right, we're surrounded by hostile forces that are standing there poised to bite and to poison. You know, Lakos es Yisrael on the one hand, but on the other hand, they're also there ready to serve Klal Yisrael. What does that mean? You know, the Chamor represents that. The Chamor is that picture of the donkey that you have in your mind when we have a mitzvah of Pidyon Peter Chamor. Right, why is the chamor special to have a mitzvah from all the unkosher animals? Because when the Jewish people had to leave Mitzrayim and there was a lot to schlep, the donkeys were there to serve. A donkey is an animal which accepts the lordship and to be in service of the people that own it, the people that are its masters. So on the one hand, the goyim are scorpions ready to bite. On the other hand, they are there in their potential as chamorim, as donkeys, ready to serve. That's the duality which presents itself at Har Sinai. So he says that's the idea that they're there, and he says, and he brings a fantastic pasuk to illustrate this, and he says, he brings the pasuk which says lo yoreu v'lo yashchitzu b'chol har kodshi, they will not do harm or do damage in my holy mountain. Right? If normally you understand, it's of course referring to the Beis Hamikdash, and it's referring in the end of days, because the land will be filled with Mol Arz Deis Hashem, Kamayim Layam Achasim. That's where we speak about the whole world being filled with the knowledge of Hashem. They won't do damage anymore. So the Akrav, the sting of the stinger or the scorpion, will be tamed, and all that will be left will be the donkey of service. But in the interim, meanwhile, both Koychos are there at work. On the one hand, you have the Akrav, that they want to destroy the world through destroying the Jewish people, and therefore they're not quite ready. They're not quite ready to be there in the mode of service, of help. That's Akravi ki chamra. Okay, so he says, what's the baskel of Oili Shenishbati, that woe unto me that I swore. You see, it's a beautiful pshat. I think, the maral is a beautiful pshat. You know, two types of destruction, internal, external. But you would have imagined maybe then it would be a scorpion the size of a lion, you know. But Maral says pshat, why chamor? Chamor is simple. It's the opposite of a nachash in its cleverness and so on. But this is a very beautiful pshat as well. And he says, what's the baskel that says that he swore? So he says two ways to explain it. If you would look at the world according to its actions and judge it accordingly, destruction would seem to be the order of the day. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a difficulty, you know, as a result, right? That he wants to go with Midas Hadin. Part of him wants to go with Midas Hadin. HaKadosh Baruch Hu stood at Kriyas Yamsuf, and when they said, you know, why are you saving the Jewish people over the Mitzvah? They're all Avdei Avodah Zarah. That was an issue. It posed an issue. It posed a challenge to Hashem. There was a resolution to the challenge. But part of it is Midas Hadin asks for, to some degree, asks for destruction. So the thing is, however, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had said, so in other words, maybe the scorpions would be given their ability to do their thing. But on the other hand, HaKadosh Baruch Hu had promised that he wouldn't destroy the world. And therefore, Klal Yisrael would remain in Golos for a period of time to extend. And therefore we have this. How is Klal Yisrael going to be made for the Neder? How is Klal Yisrael supposed to veto the Neder? Right? You get to that question, which Maral didn't deal with so much other than saying the connection. How is Klal Yisrael made for the Neder? So he says, Haforas Nedarim, Taras Nedarim has to be done by a Chacham. You have to be able to have wisdom. You have to be able to distinguish. And what gets Klal Yisrael out of the Golos is wisdom, the wisdom specifically of Torah, and the unique Torah. Haforas Nedarim is, interestingly, the Gemara says, Torah, completely Torah Shebal Peh. You know, you don't find it in the Chumash at all. It's like Haroim Pliim Besara. Or Isias Parchas Bavi Ravdim, she says, like letters floating in the air. It's Mamish Torah that the Goyim have no access to. And that's it. When Klal Yisrael grabs on to their Torah, to their specific Torah, that's when they're going to get Klal Yisrael out of the Golos. So the Hafara is an expression of that, as if Hashem made an oath sending us into Golos because we're not living up to things. What's going to take us out of the Golos? A veto of the oath. But of course, our living up to things. How do we live up to things? We live up to things by attaching ourselves to Torah, that Torah that facilitates Haforas Nedarim. That's the primary pshat, which he says, and he goes on to speak a little bit more about it. But this is the basic idea that I wanted to share. It's a very, very nice turn on the pshat and the Gemara, that's the mechanism of Hafara. Hafora is not Hafora per se. Hafora is the Torah that facilitates the Hafora. Okay.
It wasn't actually mutants.
Good morning, everybody.